Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 107. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd. Dave, great interview with Steeler running back Jonathan Dwyer. He'll be heading into his third season with the Steelers this fall. Finished the season on the IR with an injured foot. We had a chance to talk to him for 10 to 15 minutes, and that'll come up on the second half of the podcast. Very articulate young guy. That was good fun.
Yeah, it was. That kind of came together last night with him. He evidently was leaving, I think, Pittsburgh today to fly back to Georgia. He's got a camp coming up, too, that we're going to pump for him in that interview towards the end as well. So, yeah, it was fun to talk to him, and happy Friday to everybody. And, David, let's get after it.
All right, I think the most interesting stuff, the housekeeping stuff will get out of the way. The Steelers signed, they have now signed all their draft picks except their first pick and their third pick. So if I have it right, Dave, it's only David DeCastro and
Sean Spence.
Sean Spence, right?
Exactly. They've come to terms, I think, since our last podcast, not surprisingly, with David Paulson and Terrence Frederick and Kelvin Beecham, who we had the interview with on the podcast. About a week or, you know, before the rookie camp and all like that. All of those deals are, of course, four-year deals. They have all the minimum base salaries attached to them. Their contracts are all going to total out to around $2.145 million or so. The signing bonuses are going to be between $40,000 and $50,000 each on each one of those players. And, you know, Mike Adams already signed, as we already had said. So basically it's down to Spence and DeCastro. And thanks to the new CBA, you know, no more drama involved with these draft picks, David. They're all going to be signed, sealed, and delivered by the time training camp rolls around easily.
No drama. There have been four first-round picks have signed so far. If people are trying to gauge kind of where DeCastro fits in versus the other guys. The signing bonus is, you know, there would be a little bit of negotiation there. But Luke Kuechly signed with Carolina. He was the 9th overall pick, 4 years, $12.58 million. The 15th overall pick, Bruce Irvin, signed with Seattle. Terms haven't been disclosed yet. Melvin Ingram, the 18th pick at San Diego, signed for 4 years for $8.4 million. And David Wilson, the running back for the New York Giants, the last pick in the first round, the 32nd pick, has signed, and his terms haven't been disclosed. So, you know, a couple teams, I think the Bears, maybe the Ravens, have all their players signed. Well, actually, I guess it's not, well, according to my draft tracker, the Bears and the Ravens don't have all their players signed because they don't have their first-round pick signed. But I saw that somebody had them, two teams that had all their players under contract. So we'll just double-check on that. But the Steelers are making progress in terms of getting that done. Dave, the other interesting piece of news is we know the Steelers talked about, Kevin Colbert talked about, the potential to continue to see free agents after the draft. There don't seem to be big holes necessarily to fill, but the Steelers had three guys in this week, and I think there's a little bit of an interesting story behind some of this.
Yeah, absolutely. They had Dave Rayner in, you know, kind of a journeyman kicker, kick last year for the Buffalo Bills. They also had the Bengals linebacker Brandon Johnson in, and the most intriguing guy to me was Matt Roth, who played you know, defensive end with Miami last year. He's a tweener defensive end, outside linebacker type. Brandon Johnson, who was with the Bengals for several seasons, he would translate as an inside linebacker and all. And we found out this morning, David, why all the fuss about the kickers, because it kind of slipped under the radar here. But the Steelers released Grant Russell, the kicker out of Missouri that they signed as an undrafted free agent, right after the rookie minicamp, evidently. So
yeah, he. I mean, seriously, you just have to think he either is not healthy or he was so disappointing in camp, because this isn't, you know, it was a low cost signing. You bring in some competition. You need to have extra legs in camp just to get your work done. had to be, you know, I found that pretty surprising.
Yeah, and they had also earlier in the week, which should have tipped us off here as well, they had put in a claim for Jake Rogers, the kid out of Cincinnati that was released from the Buccaneers earlier this week. Now, the waiver claim was beat out by the Cowboys, who had priority in the waiver process there. So they were looking there, and then, of course, they bring in, as I mentioned, Dave Rayner, and there's no report that Rayner has signed. So I would look for them to keep shopping some of these kickers going forward. And I mentioned of the visitors there, Matt Roth, David. This is a guy that former second-round draft pick, I believe, for the Miami Dolphins. And as I said, he played defensive end and outside linebacker in these different systems outside with the Cleveland Browns. This is a guy that really gets after the quarterback. They did not come to terms with him, but he would have been an interesting add from a depth perspective for the Steelers, I feel. Now, of course, with the Buccaneers losing, having the injury over there, you have to wonder if Roth, either his asking price was too high for the Steelers, if the Steelers were just kicking tires on all these guys to have in a Rolodex in case something, you know, should happen down the line injury-wise. But Matt Roth definitely was an interesting name, you know, being he's a second-round, a former second-round selection and can play outside, left outside linebacker in the Steelers 3-4.
He actually hasn't signed, though, has he?
No, I haven't seen where Matt Roth has signed. I was just stating that because of the injury to
Daquan Bowers, tore his Achilles, that was announced yesterday, right?
Right. That you know, I even posted on Twitter, I wonder if the Buccaneers, you know, have him on the line, because this is a guy that evidently can bulk up to the 270 range and play defensive end, and, you know, that you know, just would be a depth signing for them as well, too. So keep an eye on the name, listeners, Matt Roth, see where he ends up. The other guy, Johnson, he is more of a special teams guy, would be more of a depth guy inside for the Steelers as well.
Yeah, I think Bengals special teams captain 2010, kind of who's the guy who the Steelers had that was a special teams captain and committed all the penalties 2 years ago?
Oh, Ke'Aaron Fox.
Ke'Aaron Fox, be kind of that kind of guy.
Exactly.
But inside.
Exactly. And, you know, Ke'Aaron was inside, too. But, you know, like I said, I think this is a lot of them kicking the tires, updating the Rolodex. It's probably not uncommon to have a couple more guys in. Where it would be interesting, though, David, is if everybody's healthy and they do sign one of these guys, you know, it makes you kind of wonder, hey, is Chris Carter, you know, something up with him? They're not liking his development. Maybe there's more to it. You know, we've been talking with Dave Tay about Jason Worlds, and Dave Tay's kind of convinced that they kind of looking at him to move inside, which is kind of really hasn't been, you know, backed up. You know, keep
buttering. Yeah, no, we got an answer from Kevin Colbert on that, and it sounds like, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's not where they're headed.
Exactly. So, you know, if they did sign somebody like that with 100% health on the roster, It would leave you maybe saying, hey, what's going on here? But like I said, probably just updating the Rolodex right now.
I think the other big news in the division is Phil Taylor, the nose tackle, defensive tackle for the Cleveland Browns, a guy who is a rookie, first-round pick last year, had a very good season, tears his pectoral, his left pectoral muscle, lifting weights in an organized activity at the Browns facility, and he is now most likely out for the year. That is a big loss for the Browns.
Boy, the Steelers went through the, you know, torn Achilles with Willie Colon a few years back before even training camp started. And the Steelers have been, you know, injury bug bitten several times, you know, over the past few years. And now some of these other teams, it's happened to them. Of course, we all know about the Ravens and Terrell Suggs with that injury of his. And now Phil Taylor inside, you know, an inside guy that, you know, that they hope they were looking for going into his second season to really kind of make an impact for him. That is a big blow for them. So, you know, they're going to have to get on the horn as well and start, you know, getting some bodies in there. And this late in free agency, those types just are not laying around.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to say, Dave. This he's a big kid out of Baylor. He was drafted, if I remember correctly. You'll remember they did this draft day deal with the Atlanta Falcons last year, and just as a point of reference, the 24th pick was David DeCastro. This year, their pick, the Phil Taylor pick, was they took Sheard with the in the second round. Let me see. I'm just trying to look it up here while we talk. They took Taylor with the 21st pick, and that's the pick the Bengals moved out of this year. So he was a high pick in the first round, big kid out of Baylor. And he had a good rookie year, no question. He and Sheard really turned over that defensive line, and they had, you know, they're trying to add some pieces to the puzzle again this year, but that's a big loss for them. That, you know, you're not just going to replace that kind of guy. And so, you know, Steelers are getting some breaks with these injuries to the other teams, as you said. The other piece of news, Vince Young comes out today that Vince Young has signed with Buffalo. Boy, that star has certainly fallen a long way since, well, even since his rookie season with the Titans.
Oh, absolutely. That you have to wonder how, I mean, that's a one-year deal to my understanding. It's probably going to be one of those qualifying contracts, so I wouldn't go right out and I know this is a Steelers podcast, but if any Buffalo Bills fans stumble across this podcast, I wouldn't rush out and buy your Vince Young Bills jersey right away. What does this say about a guy like Dennis Dixon, though, David? This guy can't get a job. Vince Young's getting a job, and Dennis Dixon's only getting a sniff or two. I think the Rams was the last team that he got a sniff from. Doesn't say much for him, does it?
No, I mean, the Ravens went ahead and what, did they sign Curtis Painter as their third guy?
Yeah, and I think that the report, too, out of the Ravens, I think they had the Florida State kid was announced as signing as an undrafted free agent for the Ravens today as well, too, a quarterback in their list as well, too. So, yeah, Curtis Painter over Dennis Dixon.
Yeah, that's you know, he's gonna have trouble getting a job. It's, you know, the whole thing. I think the question about his arm and reading defenses, and you know, it's tough. I think maybe Dennis Dixon. Not that any guy shouldn't feel confident about their abilities, but I think we all knew that you know, Dennis Dixon talking about he was looking for to challenge for a starting job was a pipe dream, and now he's having trouble getting an invite to camp. Feel bad for him, but I think that is where people see him. He's gonna be. You know, he'll be lucky to be a fringe NFL player for a year or two more.
John Brantley was the kid I was thinking about for the Ravens, and he was out of Florida, not Florida State, so I apologize there. But, yeah, I mean, this time of year, you know, there's not many jobs out there. And Dixon, I've made it known several times on the blog and on the podcast that I never saw what others saw in Dennis Dixon. And this is a guy that's probably just going to, you know, at best be a number three quarterback again somewhere, hopefully for him by the time the preseason rolls around.
Another, as we know, these NFL, the mini camps and the things that are happening, different teams are on different schedules. Word out of San Francisco is Randy Moss looks great. He's been running sprints. Somebody on Twitter was talking about ran 12 go patterns, looked fast as he's ever looked. This is a guy who will add a huge dimension to that offense. They tried to add a bunch of pieces. They continue to, you know, they obviously took the kid Jenkins with their first pick in the first round, the wide receiver out of Illinois. They had Randy Moss. They took they added Brandon Jacobs, the big back from the Giants. We've talked about the pick of Michael James. They're going to put some weapons around Alex Smith now, and that's an interesting team. If Randy Moss really is, you know, who knows before how long before the situation combusts, because it will combust at some point. But he does had something there that, you know, they didn't have in their receiving core.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about all those receivers that they added over there. What Mario Manningham, too?
Yep, Manningham. And I think there's one more in that group, but you know, their first round pick is a kid who can fly, and they had a choice between a bunch of receivers, so they obviously think pretty highly of him. And then of course you have Crabtree, who I don't know that he's not the issue with Crabtree. He's not a burner, so you know, he's going to be a guy who can work the middle of the field and do those types of things for you. But if they have, you know, now speed in between Jenkins and Moss, if they have some speed on the outside, that. And if Manningham's your third guy, well, it's certainly an improvement over what they did have.
You know, getting right, I want to touch on the Browns real quick. Did you hear some of the comments, Holmgren, over the last few days and some of the interviews asking about that draft and all?
I did not. You know, I think we talked about this a little bit. I don't know that I saw anything new in Holmgren's comments other than confirming that they were looking to draft Kendall Wright. Now,
well, Stephen Hill ended up being the guy, I think, what was the guy that they also had their eyes on. I think Holmgren confirmed this week in the press conference this year. So, you know, if this indeed is the case, we mentioned Kendall Wright and Stephen Hill, whichever one of these two it was, but you know, it just goes to show you how the draft philosophy is. They had basically two guys circled on their draft board in the first round, and they you know, they knew they were going to get the running back, you know, by trading up with the Vikings into that spot and getting him. But they were almost for sure that Hill was going to fall down to them, with, you know, in that lower pick there. And once he came off the board, like we said, now a Browns fan got on one of the guys, I think it's from footballsickness.com that he runs. I also is a Browns fan, saying, well, the plan all along was to, even if they had gotten Hill to move back up into that first round. And, you know, Whedon, even though the report's coming out today and their first minicamp session is really slinging the ball well, very accurate and all like that, it still makes you wonder, you know, did they panic in taking him, you know, in that second pick of theirs when they surely probably could have gotten this guy in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, I've said all along, I think it was a bad decision, although, you know, Stephen Hill was on the board when they chose the 22. So I think the whole issue is that they were talking about Kendall Wright from Baylor.
It probably was Kendall Wright, my bad.
Yeah, Stephen Hill went at 43 to the Jets, 11th pick of the second round. And so, you know, the issue is Holmgren came out and addressed it. I don't know whether you want to address it like that or not. The word had snuck out, and it made it sound like, and I have, you know, I talked about this on draft night when Shermer and Heckett, the coach and the GM, came in and talked to the media. There's a quote. I mean, they're quoted as saying, you know, we haven't decided what we're going to do with Colt McCoy. We haven't even talked about tonight's about Whedon. We haven't even discussed, you know, what we're going to do. And you just sound dumb. You just sound stupid coming out, telling your local media that you took a quarterback in the first round and you don't have a plan around what you're going to do with your incumbent quarterback. Just say, look, we're going to have the best player play the position when the time comes. Say whatever you want. Don't say we haven't talked about it. We don't know what we're going to do. It looks silly. I don't think you want it out there that you wanted another player. I don't think the Steelers would ever have that known, that if DeCastro was off the board, that he was the guy they wanted and they took Hightower. It's just the organization just doesn't look good doing it that way. And as I said on 970 when I was hosting that week, it's the Browns being the Browns. You said the same thing on Twitter this week. It just looks bad.
And you're right. It was Kendall Wright. I apologize. I don't know why I'm thinking Stephen Hill this morning. But evidently in what he had said it was a part of a three-part plan involved, you know, with the other being trading up to get Whedon there. You know, It's just funny when you kind of look at the differences in the draft and philosophies, though. How can you – I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is how can you marry yourself to three players like that and not let the board come to you, I guess is what I'm saying. It just dumbfounds me a little bit. But, hey, you know, Holmgren's been there a few years now, so, you know, at least he's going to go down, I guess, you know, with getting the players that he supposedly – had targeted there. So
well, it'd be very interesting if they have a top 8 pick next year. The three guys coming out, you got Landry Jones, you've got Barkley at USC, Landry Jones of course at Oklahoma, you've got the kid at Arkansas, I think there's the kid from Virginia Tech. I mean, you've got guys who people are throwing around as being, you know, top 15 picks in the draft. If the Browns don't have a good year, it would be interesting to see if they roll the dice again on quarterback. And we have a lot of football to be played, and we'll see how Brandon Whedon plays. We'll see what happens with Colt McCoy. But, you know, I think we'll find out pretty quickly if Brandon Whedon can get it done. It's clear to me that he's going to be the starting quarterback on opening day. I can't see McCoy getting that job. And, Dave, one of the things I found interesting that I don't know that we've talked about is there's a perception that when Colt McCoy got knocked out in the Steeler game and then came back in the game and he got blasted by the organization, by Colt McCoy's father, there was a story that went around that somebody within the Browns organization told somebody that his fate was sealed that day. He was not going to be their guy. I don't know if that's true. But we had the whole story that came out, I think, a year ago that Mike Silver wrote, how the different guys in charge of the organization, he was basically, Colt McCoy was getting hazed his first year with the team. And again, it's just these kind of things going around in an organization. It just looks so unprofessional. Somebody made a mistake with Colt McCoy, and his father, you know, should be upset about it. But you hope teams don't make decisions based on, you know, being reamed in the press by a guy's parent.
Yeah, absolutely. Now Bill Belichick would probably cut a player for doing something like that. You know, he doesn't like his players talking to the media. Period. So.
Well, this was Colt's dad. I mean, Colt didn't even say, you know, he didn't.
Yeah, but you know, Belichick though, I could see Belichick doing the same thing, David. You know. Yeah, you're responsible for your parents' actions, too, would be kind of Belichick's action. But, I mean, let's just face it. I mean, this is what? This is the third year for Holmgren with the Browns here. I mean, and have they gotten – where has he gotten them thus far, you know? I mean, this year, like you said, if they finish – I mean, let's face it, it's going to take a minor miracle for them to win the division. It's going to take a semi-minor miracle for them to make the playoffs. If this team finishes sub-500 again, you know, when do you pull the ripcord on Holmgren?
Yeah, that'll be interesting because the question is, does Holmgren get it pulled or does Shermer get it pulled? Or heck, you know, it'd be interesting to see how that goes. I have to think that Holmgren is going to get a little bit more time. This will be Shermer's second year, so I'm guessing he's going to get a third year as well. You know, injuries like this and starting a new quarterback certainly can make the Browns, you know, road difficult. Look, they're the fourth best team in the division.
Hey, and I have no sympathy as a Steeler fan, and I know everybody listening too, when it comes to injuries, you know, because look at what the Steelers have gone through for the last several years. So you draft for depth, and Mike Tomlin likes to say the next man up, and that's why it's important. That's why a 53-man roster filling this thing out is very important, because injuries are part of the game and all like that. And you can't just draft for starters in this league going forward. So, you know, I don't want to hear anything from the Ravens or the Browns or any team this year, and you definitely will not hear most of Steeler Nation using that as an excuse either. So, you know, getting to some of the Steelers, you know, we are a Steeler podcast, so some of the draft picks, Alameda Ta'amu from, you know, the fourth rounder out of Washington, Chris Hoke was on 93.7 The Fan. And they kind of beat me to him. I've been trying to get Hokie scheduled again for an interview here, but they did a really good job with the interview with him, David, kind of asking the pertinent questions that I was planning on asking Hokie as well. And basically, you know, what he thought about Alameda, you know, how long, or, you know, what a player goes through a nose tackle in the Steelers system and all like that. And his comments were pretty, you know, if you've listened to Hokie before, he's very forthcoming and all like that. And he really thinks that to get comfortable in the Steelers scheme, that it's going to take, you know, a year or two for him. And that's not too terribly surprising. Now, he said, now he did recollect that, you know, Hampton did start, you know, the second half of his rookie season and all, but he called Hampton a freak of nature, though. And he reemphasized how Coach John Mitchell, the defensive line coach, basically breaks these kids down, you know, and he doesn't care what their techniques are. He doesn't care what they learn in college or anything like that. He basically busts these kids down and starts them over again. And many people are under the conception that, you know, when you get a 340-pound nose tackle, all you got to do is put him out there and point him, you know, either straight ahead or to the right or to the left, and it goes a lot deeper than that. You know, we've seen at times Casey Hampton. It's not often, but you'll see times where Hampton even drops back into a short zone. You know, it doesn't happen very much, but it's all about the, you know, knowing the intricacies of the defense. Knowing, you know, schemes and formations that you're going up against. So, you know, I'm not ruling out Alameda starting at some point during this season. The kid is talented, but as we've said before, if Casey Hampton's ready to start the season and not on PUP, John Mitchell was on top of that table during his post-draft press conference there saying, hey, don't discount Steve McClendon here. So, Chris Hoke believes that, it's going to be a little bit of a growing period here for Alameda, as to be expected. And, maybe year one or second year or so is when this guy really be comfortable in this system moving forward. But that's a great interview. You can read about some of the comments Hoke made on SteelersDepot.com, and I've got a link to the interview as well.
Okay, good stuff. Dave, there hasn't been a ton of Steeler news. An article by Bill Polian, who, as everybody knows, he's been an executive of the year, general manager of the year, whatever the award is, a bunch of times, helped build the Colts team, was let go here as the Colts revamp their organization, both in the front office and on the field. He's been writing for ESPN. He does some work on television. We've seen him a bunch of times. He's not the most charismatic guy, but he comes across as a guy who knows what he's talking about, pretty thoughtful guy. He wrote an insider article on the NFL's most pivotal players in 2012 in terms of kind of how they're going to impact things for their team. And it's a pretty interesting list. Mark Sanchez tops the list. Guys like Nick Fairley and Matt Schaub are on it. Torrey Smith of the Ravens. And down at number nine, you get to the combination of Ziggy Hood and Cameron Hayward for the Steelers. And people talk about, I think the whole age issue with the Steelers defense has been beaten to a pulp. And that, it's not clearly not as much of an issue now as it was in the past. A lot of these replacements seem to be in place. The corners have gotten younger. Farrier's replacement maybe isn't there, but the D-line is much younger. And you know, we've seen this. It's an evolutionary thing. As Tom, who, as you said, is going to be Casey Hampton's replacement. What are your thoughts? I think he talks about Hayward as being a cornerstone pick, really a guy that the Steelers can build around. And he feels like Hood is similarly gifted and with potential. And I think we've touched on this a little bit, that Ziggy didn't have the type of year last year that we would like to see out of a guy in his second year. And Hayward didn't see that much time either. And both these guys, it'll be interesting to see who gets the starting nod on the left side this year. And what are your thoughts about where those guys stand relative to each other?
Well, we talked about Hood pretty much on that last podcast, so I'm not going to recap that as much as looking forward to what Cameron Hayward has to offer. And a lot of people are thinking that Hayward could be a guy that pushes Ziggy in camp. Hayward did not have the luxury of the rookie mini camps and the OTA sessions last year. Didn't see a lot of time early. Saw most of his time kind of later in the season there. I think he played just under 250 snaps last year, David. The run, his pass rush was slightly above average. And his run defense, I think, is the thing about holding up. Mostly played, I think, on the right side when Kiesel was missed a little bit of time with that quad hamstring type stuff. But I do think this is going to be a good season for Hayward. You're going to see him rotate out a lot, because here's my thoughts too. Brett Kiesel, they need to keep this guy as fresh as possible throughout the season. He's coming off that groin injury that he suffered in the AFC wildcard game against Denver. By all signs, and let's not make a mistake here, Kiesel, I thought, had a great season last year, despite missing a couple games with injury and all like that. He doesn't give you at times the pass rush that you really would want, but we have to remember, in a 3-4 defense, it's more about pressure sometimes and collapsing the pocket and staying in your lanes, which Kiesel is a master of the batted down pass. Hayward, I think, is the same type build, and this is a guy that seven pressures I'm showing last year, four quarterback hits, one sack in less than 250 snaps. So this is a kid, I think, that could be a cornerstone. I think they're going to be lighting a fire under Ziggy Hood's butt during training camp this year. Hayward, with all this extra time now underneath his belt, being able to participate in all these OTAs and mini camp sessions and all like that, I think he could push Ziggy on that side. David, it would not surprise me to see Hood start the year as the number one guy on the left side. But, hey, if he's not getting the job done over there, he might see a quick hook after the first two or three games.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the playing time rotates. If guys are going to be comfortable playing on both sides. If Hayward, as you said, I think he saw most of his time on the right side.
And he saw most of the right, I think in college too, at Ohio State, I think he saw most of his time on the right side as well.
Yeah, and he can, you know, maybe he's equally comfortable going from either edge. Again, it's not rocket science, but guys get more comfortable on one side or the other. You obviously have a different hand down if your hand's down and that kind of stuff. But, we'll see what happens. But I think it is interesting. I do think those guys need to take a step forward. We saw the run defense take a step back this past year from what we've seen in years past. And rather than giving up 60, 70 yards a game, it was giving up 100 yards a game. So we'll see how much more focus there is on that aspect of things. Of course, the pass defense was better, and the overall numbers were still excellent. But I think for us, we've talked about this. At the end of the day, the key to the Steelers' season was really not generating the turnovers they have in the past. They were the low in the NFL, I think, with 15. They were at a historic low for some period of time before getting a couple turnovers in the last few games. So that kind of stuff could have been the difference between playing at home and playing on the road, and you know, with the offense getting some short fields that they didn't really get. So that'll be a big thing to keep an eye on. When we talked about Terrell Suggs going down, it just, you know, we saw the numbers that he had, and yet 7 forced fumbles by himself and 2 interceptions by himself to go with all the sacks, and that's why you're Defensive Player of the Year. We'll see if these guys can step up and generate some more turnovers and get things, make sure guys are off the linebackers so they can do their job.
Yeah, you know, the pressure's the key thing from them outside linebackers, David, and a big key in the turnovers as well, too. And the Steelers, you know, when James Harrison and Lamar Woodley missed all those games last year combined, hardly ever didn't see too many games where both of those guys were on the field at the same time. That was where they really, really struggled the most, I thought, especially in the pass defense. Although the pass defense, considering that the pressure wasn't there, played extremely well. It just wasn't the splash plays, weren't there. They weren't able to get the ball on short fields, turn it over to the offense, most of the year there. I think it was only like, I can't remember, I think I counted, it was only like 9 times or something that it was a turnover in the on the other side of 50. I'm gonna have to go.
Yeah, I think it was less than that.
It might have been. I'll have to go back and double check that. But Hayward, this is a big jump year for him. As is Hood, as we've talked about. I'm not concerned with Kiesel as long as he stays healthy. I'm not really that concerned about the nose tackle, even if it is Steve McClendon to start the season there. I think with the linebacker play inside, with Timmons being able to stay inside more, we'll have to see how I thought Larry Foote played good in relief most of the year at the buck position as well, too. So I'm not so concerned with the linebacker core, as long as they stay healthy, than I am with the left defensive end spot.
Well, something to keep an eye on. Dave, anything you want to wrap up with before we get to our interview with Jonathan Dwyer?
Yeah, we had an email from one of the listeners asking about Antonio Brown. Of course, all these rookie deals now, thanks to the new CBA, are 4 years now. Right. He was asking, why was Antonio Brown only signed to a 3-year deal? And the Steelers over the years, David, before the new CBA, the Steelers always liked to sign their draft picks that were drafted from the 3rd round and on to 3-year deals, while other teams were signing their guys to 4-year deals. Now, the theory behind this, we can debate a little bit, but a little bit less, a little lesser signing bonus probably involved because of the length of the deal, and I guess too, that most of your draft picks are probably going to basically be gone after 3 years. I mean, let's face it, not all 7 picks on a standard draft year are going to work out. But the Steelers were notorious for only signing their first and second round guys to deals longer than 3 years. So with the new CBA and all, you basically have eliminated restricted free agency now, because a player would be restricted after 3 years. If he's under contract for 4 years, well, then at the end of his contract, then he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, and you have to wonder if the Steelers maybe were, it's hard to criticize the front office that has seemingly done everything right, but you have to wonder if maybe the Steelers made a mistake here by signing these guys to 3-year deals, because you have a Mike Wallace, you have Emmanuel Sanders, you have Antonio Brown, and so while they might save a little bit of money on a signing bonus – because you should give them a little bit lower signing bonus because it's a three-year deal rather than a four-year deal. If you have one player break out like Mike Wallace, or you have a player like Antonio Brown who breaks out to this kind of level that we've seen, you're going to end up paying them a year earlier than you would have. And so maybe it's penny wise and pound foolish.
Well, you know, you still have the franchise tag and restricted tender tags to work with, though.
Well,
too.
Right, you still have them, but you're going to pay Mike Wallace $2.7 million. You sure as hell weren't going to pay him $2.7 million if he signed a four-year deal.
Well, who's to say? The guy still could be bitching about his contract right now after his first 3 years in the league, thinking he's underpaid.
Of course he could, but we've seen a lot less of that with guys, you know, under contract in that kind of situation.
I'm willing to bet you that this is totally speculative and hypothetical, but that's what we do best, David. You know, if he had been signed to a four-year deal, this guy would still be threatening to hold out for training camp for a new deal at this point, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, as you say, speculation, so who knows? a lot of guys in the league, you know, I'm not sure I see the logic in signing them to three-year deals.
Those guys bust out, then you can throw a second-round, first-round tender on them. And then work towards a new deal, you know?
Sure, you can. But the point is, if you look at all the contracts that are being signed, in the fourth year of the deal, none of these guys are making, you know, more than like $1 million. So if you end up having to put a restricted tender on somebody, you're going to pay them $2.5-3 million. So it costs you $1.5 million that you wouldn't have spent, or maybe $2 million that you wouldn't have spent in that fourth year. Now, obviously, it's not going to happen to a lot of guys. But the point is, if he's gone, it doesn't cost you anything anyway. So you would think you'd rather have him under contract for more years, since that fourth year is generally going to be maybe less than $1 million.
Yeah, but what if the guy, what if you got him up under, you know, like a third-round pick? You know, what if you got him up underneath a four-year deal with that signing bonus that some of these kids were getting prior to the, you know, new CBA, third-round guy, and the guy just totally flops on you, and you've got, you know, all that signing bonus that comes forward on you and escalates too, so...
Well, yeah, come on, let's be realistic. Third-round guys weren't getting huge signing bonuses.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that's that much more against the cap that's rolling forward on you, though. So, you know, I don't know. It's 6-1, half a dozen out of the other. But there's a method to the madness, for sure.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'd like to hear the answer because, you know, I can see, how it might cost in the Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown situation and Emmanuel Sanders situation is going to cost them money. I don't know how it saved them more than it's going to cost them. So, you know, I'd like to hear the argument.
And you know what? I came across, I had an email conversation, a very brief one with Omar Khan about 2 years ago. He couldn't disclose much information to me, but I still have his email address in my mail here. So
let's see if we can get him on. Maybe we'll see if we can get him on.
Oh, boy. Of course, you know, even if he did agree to the interview to come on here, he's not going to answer specifics as it relates to current, you know, salary cap amounts.
I think he can answer a question about philosophy of signing guys versus 3 versus 4 years.
You know, it's probably going to be a brief interview with very limited questions that we can ask him, but that would definitely be one, I think, now with the new CBA, that he would definitely be able to answer maybe as to why the philosophy was to that. So I'm going to start trying to effort that and all like that, you know, being a junior salary cap type fan myself, that would be like the mother of all interviews for me.
Yeah, let's not get everybody's hopes up, but yeah, he would be a great guest to have. All right, Dave, good stuff as always, and we got started on that before we got on air because I was laughing how people, beat reporters for different teams, were misreporting or misremembering, as Roger Clemens would say, the length of contracts that guys were signing, because all these contracts are 4 years and the first round guys often have a team option for a fifth year. So it seemed kind of crazy that guys were getting this wrong because it's a standard format. But just a bit of housekeeping. Again, big thanks from both Dave and myself to the donations that we've got. I've done my best to get emails out to everybody who's contributed to us. It means a lot to us. It's touching, and we're excited about it. And thank you very much. We'll just leave it at that. But if you haven't gotten an email from me, I apologize. But let it be known that Dave and I are really appreciative of what everybody's done.
Absolutely. You can follow David on Twitter at HammerSpeaks. Follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. If you feel you want to donate through PayPal, there's a link up on Steelers Depot if you want to support the show. Or you can just PayPal to the address admin@SteelersDepot.com. Find us on iTunes. The TuneIn radio app also is carrying the Terrible Podcast as well now, too. And a lot of good, interesting things happening for our show right now, and we're getting more and more interviews lined up along the way as well, too.
Yep, so stay tuned. Jonathan Dwyer, seventh-round pick of the Steelers in 2000.
Sixth-round pick,
in 2010. He'll be entering his third season. As we said, he was on the IR at the end of the year, but has shown some flashes. He's a guy at Georgia Tech. Talks about some of the things that happened at Georgia Tech and then the transition to the NFL. As I said, articulate young guy. Great to have him on. So without further ado, here's Jonathan Dwyer. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dan. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. We're pleased to have as our guest Steeler running back Jonathan Dwyer. Jonathan, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be a part of this, guys. Thank you very much.
Hey, Jonathan, let's just start out for people who are listening to this and who know football. When you're at Georgia Tech, you're playing in a different kind of offense. It's an offense that's pretty unique to college football. When Paul Johnson came, brought in 2008, kind of brought that offense from Navy. Why don't you tell us how that was and then the transition to the NFL and what the Steelers were doing under Bruce Arians and Mike Tomlin?
To be honest with you, the hardest transition was transferring from, you know, being in a pro style offense my freshman year with the Buffalo Bills coach, Chan Gailey,
yep,
to going to Paul Johnson's offense, because it was something I never did before and something I have never, you know, done, you know, being in a 3-point stance, you know, 5 yards deep, you know, I haven't done that since I was a child. So it was an adjustment, and you have to, you know, react a lot faster than normally when you're 7 yards deep and you're in a two-point stance. So it was a challenge, and you know, we bought into the system. You know, we went out there and, you know, we had some great, you know, unique players and great talent, and we just came together as one and just went out there and just played hard and just bought into Coach Johnson's system.
And then, so when you transition, when you get drafted by the Steelers and you come in, you go have to go back to what you were doing your freshman year and what you'd done probably in high school. Was that pretty seamless, or tell us about, like, kind of the difficulties of assimilating that offense, maybe kind of your blocking responsibilities and other things you might have?
The offense was, you know, a little more complicated just because of the terminology. And, you know, you get a lot more responsibilities when it came to the passing game of, you know, blitz pickup, and not just, you know, you weren't just destined with just, you know, this one person and, you know, maybe the DB on the strong side or whatever. You had pretty much, you know, every DB from any way they came from, and your main responsibility. So it was, you know, a lot of side adjustments and things like that. But you know, as you studied and learned a lot more and things like that, you started to get the hang of it and started to get used to it. So it wasn't big of a challenge. You know, just, you know, changing the terminology was probably the biggest thing.
Jonathan, how about giving our listeners an update about how's that foot of yours doing? I know it cost you the last part of the season. You ended up on injured reserve there. How's the foot coming along after surgery?
Well, it's really good. It's, you know, having, you know, great improvement. You know, being out here in Pittsburgh, working out, and being around the guys, and, you know, learning the new offense system with Coach Haley, and out there participating with the coaches and things like that, and that format, and just working on those things, but also resting my foot at the same time. Just doing, you know, enough, you know, just to, you know, get, you know, acclimated of getting, being on it, running around on it, you know, cutting and things like that, but not pushing it too much, because, you know, I mean, the season's, you know, not tomorrow. You know, I have time to, you know, get into, you know, more of a, you know, use of using it on a consistent basis. But, you know, just trying to be smart with it right now.
Are you going to be able to participate in the session next week?
Yeah, I've been participating, you know, week in, week out with them. But, you know, it's just I'll be more of a full go once we start OTAs in June.
And you're going to be training down with Tom Shaw down in July. Is that correct? And what kind of led to that decision to go down there with Ike Taylor and the gang?
Well, you know, just the fact of, you know, he, you know, what he's done, you know, in all aspects. And you know, I'm not going to go to Tom Shaw anymore. You know, made my agent talk and things like that. I'm going to go to Pete Bomarito down there with Antonio Brown and, you know, Lawrence Timmons and a few other guys down there. You know, both those places have, you know, are traditional with, you know, players who are very, who are in great shape and, you know, traditional, a lot of pro bowlers and, you know, experienced guys who, you know, work hard and, you know, are always in top shape week, year in, year out. So just want to go down and learn from them, compete with them, and get better and get myself, you know, prepared to, you know, be the best player I can be to help us, you know, get to New Orleans.
And have you had a chance? I think we heard that Todd Haley was handing the playbooks out last week. Have you had a chance to kind of go through that?
Yeah, you know, we have meetings, you know, time to time with our coach, Kerb Wilson, and, you know, spend time on that, on, you know, learn the system and, you know, get acclimated with that and going out and, you know, with, as an offensive unit, going out and running plays and things and like that and just learning more and more about the offense each and every day.
And then, you know, Ben had some recent comments on radio on, I think, the Rich Eisen show and again on the Dan Patrick show where he referred to it as a Rosetta Stone Rosetta Stone book. And I think Ed Bouchette in the Post-Gazette quoted him as saying, you know, it's about 90% changed or so or 90% different. Is that kind of what your take on it is? I mean, is it tough being a guy that you know, you're entering your third year in the league now? Is it tough to make the change from what Bruce Arians did to what Todd Haley you know, has in store for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not that bad of an adjustment. I think, you know, it's just you know, too much, you know, it's different things, but, you know, some things connect to each other in a, you know, same way, same place, but just different terminology. So it's just trying to, you know, just get, you know, change the terminology of it and just get back to the understanding of, you know, get acclimated with the system. But, you know, it's to be honest with you right now, it's a smooth process right now. And just, you know, glad that, you know, a lot of us took the opportunity of coming up here and learning it from, you know, earlier, going before we just head into OTAs.
Jonathan, there are a bunch of backs coming back. We don't know how quickly Rashard's going to be back from his ACL injury. But you got Isaac Redman. You've got Baron Batch, you've got John Clay, and the Steelers drafted Chris Rainey. It looks like a very talented group of guys. How does that work when you guys are all working out together? You're competing for roster spots. How's the relationship with everybody in the group?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, we're brothers, and you know, Kerb always teaches, Coach Wilson always teaches us that it's not about just, you know, competing with each other. It's also about competing, you know, with other people in different rooms, you know, when it comes to special teams and
right,
when it comes, you know, in that aspect as well. So, you know, I mean, all we can do, you know, the thing is that all you can do is go out there and do your job each and every day and try to improve yourself and improve your game week in, week out. You know, every day is an interview when you're out there, when it comes to practice, when it comes to games, when it comes to meetings, you know, showing the coaches that you understand what you're doing, working hard and doing the best that you can. You know, because, I mean, you know, worst comes to worst, you know, if you go out there and you do the right things and all those aspects and play, you know, have some great tape and things like that, you know, unfortunately, if it's, you know, not meant to be here, you know, someone else will get you. But,
right,
you know, I think that, you know, we have a great group and, you know, the fact of Mendenhall being out and things like that, you know, not knowing when Rashard will come back, you know, I think that we'll have a great group to, you know, solidify, you know, show that we probably have the best one, like the best backs in the league.
How close did you pay attention to the draft just as a member of the team, seeing what the other teams do? I know it's become such a big event for everybody. Do you watch it as a fan as well, or is that something you didn't pay much attention to?
Yeah, I just wanted to see who we were going to draft the first round because I didn't know who we were going to draft.
Yeah,
but other
yeah.
than that, you know, I check back on it from time to time. And, you know, you get Twitter updates and things like that, so you'll see it, you know, in that aspect. But at the same time, it's like, you we know as a team that, you know, with Mr. Colburn and, you know, Coach Tomlin, you know, we have a great staff that, you know, drafts, you know, exceptional talent year in, year out. So, you know, you're pretty much not worried about, you know, what type of players they're gonna bring in. You all just wanna know, you know, what the, you know, mindset is, and, you know, pretty much you see what their thought process at the first two rounds was, you know, to solidify, you know, pick our, you know, younger, you know, athletic offensive linemen, and, you know, get a linebacker to replace, you know, the James Ferrier situation and things like that. So, you know, I think, you know, we have a very talented draft and draft class, and hopefully, you know, they'll be the draft class to help us, you know, get to New Orleans.
That had to be a pretty good feeling, though, when the first two picks are top-rated linemen. I mean, David DeCastro, you watch this kid on film from Stanford, and the way he pulls and can run the power and all. That had to get you excited, though, in those first two rounds, right?
Oh, yeah, it did. You know, I mean, you know, he's a nasty player. You know, not in the way of, you know, being a dirty player, but, you know, he's a very physical guy. You know, he's a, you know, exceptional run blocker, but he's also, you know, has good feet to be, you know, a good pass blocker as well. And he's very physical. And, you know, when you got a guy like Marquise Pouncey, you know, right next to you, I mean, that's a perfect combination. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, he's going to have a, you know, come in and, you know, have high expectations for himself, and, you know, we're going to have high expectations for him as well. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, exciting to see what he's about. And, you know, same thing with the guys from Ohio State and, you know, all the other players that we drafted, you know, the D-tackle, and, you know, the list goes on and on. So, you know, I'm kind of, you know, excited to see what, you know, these guys bring to the table and how they're going to do to help us, you know, get to New Orleans.
Hey, Jonathan, I know you got a football camp coming up in Marietta. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my football camp is in Marietta. It's going to be at my high school, Kell High School, Marietta, Georgia, from June 14th to the 16th. And, you know, it's a camp to, you know, raise money also, not just for the football program, but my neuro labs for ADD. And they have a lab in Atlanta that's named after me that is going to help, you know, kids, you know, study the brainwaves of kids with disabilities, with ADD, ADHD, and autism, to see how their brain works, and, you know, see how what they could do to improve them and make them, you know, strengthen them, and you know, solidify, you know, their chances of you know, getting better.
That's fantastic. How would people get more information about that if they wanted that?
Well, you know,
about the camp. Where would they go?
About the camp. Okay, I mean, they can go to John Dwyer Youth Camp .eventbrite.com and register there. And, you know, I'll post things on Twitter, and, you know, you'll see things all over the place about it. And, you know, they can, you know, register there. And, you know, it's going to be a great event. A lot of great players are going to be out there helping me out, from, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown. You know, just that's just a few people from my team and other teams, other guys from different teams as well. So it's a great cause and a great event. It's going to be fun and, you know, enjoyable.
One final.
So those are, go ahead, Dave. Yeah, I just want to give the Twitter handle is at @JDwyer, DWYER27, for those who aren't already following Jonathan on Twitter.
One final question, Jonathan, we'll wrap you up here, and I know you can't talk too terribly much about this, but a lot of what Steeler Nation kind of ask is with Todd Haley coming in is the use of a fullback. Bruce Arians, of course, used David Johnson at times back there, but it wasn't, you know, an overwhelming amount of times. You know, are you seeing much use of the fullback in the new Todd Haley offense, or will we hardly notice a difference as far as, you know, formations and all go, and personnel used in that offense?
Well, I mean, from what it seems like, you know, he's going to run the football. So, you know, with that, you know, with saying that, you know, we got two fullbacks that are in our room right now, in the running back room. So, and, you know, by them bringing in two guys, you know, that just shows itself that, you know, he wants to use them. You know, we have two athletic guys who can catch the ball, who also run ball, who are very, you know, who could be two or great blockers as well. So, you know, I think, you know, he's going to use them and use the fact that he wants to be, you know, a physical football team and, you know, use that fullback to, help the running backs, you know, make some plays.
Are you talking about David Johnson and Will Johnson? Are those the two fullbacks you're talking about?
Yes, those are two fullbacks right now.
All right, great stuff. David, you want to wrap him up?
Yeah, Jonathan, great stuff. Really appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, Steeler Nation's rooting for you. Get back healthy this year and hope you get a chance to be involved in the action. Best of luck with your camp and the OTAs, the mini camp, and I'll look forward to seeing you in July when you guys get back in town.
Oh, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.